for argument, Cain versus Locke. Mr. Eisenberg.
Your Honors, Michael Eisenberg for the appellant, Mrs. Cain. If it so please the Court, Your Honors, we assert that the Court below erred as a matter of law by granting summary judgment, that ultimately by not providing, according to Local Rules 56.1b, a disputed statement in facts, did not and should not have granted appellees summary judgment in their favor, that a form over substance should not allow to serve detrimental to my client's case in a motion for summary judgment, where not only in the record but also in the complaint and the briefing, clearly there were facts in dispute. And ultimately, although the agency provided information that would substantiate their claim, there were problems twofold. One, they were all self-serving statements. And two, they provided no documentation.
What's the strongest evidence that she presented?
The strongest evidence, I believe, was her testimony amongst, if I recall correctly, some of the depositions of the agency, which also included a sudden lack of memory by some of the deponents.
What was an example of her testimony that created a genuine issue of material fact?
That her supervisor was constantly harassing her to the point where it became disruptive and mentally unbecoming. That she was being harassed by her colleagues and coworkers to the point where she was isolated from the others.
That isolated, physically isolated? Wasn't it just that the employees were instructed not to talk to each other during the workday? Do their work, don't
Right. Well, and that is correct. They're not supposed to be talking with one another.
How's that isolation?
But when the employees are commenting around her, deliberately yelling at her, making snide remarks, occasionally closing in on her in inappropriate ways. I mean,
did she complain to the management?
The management in particular, the one who was in part causing the harassment, or the management for whom she had filed a discriminatory claim before that, and I do apologize, the matter was either settled or I believe she won.
But did she complain about this? Well, this isolation, for example, isn't there a procedure in the Census Bureau where you can file a complaint with the Human Resources Department?
Well, there's the two that I'm familiar with. One being the supervisor, and two, and in the case here, she filed a complaint with the EEO.
No. But you have to go through when you're complaining about being harassed by your coworkers. You're supposed to, exhaust your internal remedies. If the company has, or the employer has, established a procedure for people complaining about misconduct, then you have to do that. You have to complain to the right person.
Perhaps if
no, it's not perhaps. That's what the Supreme Court says.
I understand, sir.
They tell the employees what the proper procedure is, whom do you call or write or what have you, then you have to do that.
However, my understanding is there is the exception if the harassment is based on a perceived EEO issue. If that is the case, she then complains.
Based on what?
A perceived EEO, equal employment issue.
No. The whole point is complain about sex discrimination, racial discrimination, disability, whatever it is.
Retaliation.
If the employer has established a procedure by which to complain to the higher-ups that you're being mistreated, you have to do that. Because the employer doesn't know what your coworkers are doing to you, right?
She did complain to her immediate supervisor, the same supervisor with whom she's launched an EEO complaint against.
Well, is that the route that the Census Bureau provides for people who are complaining about harassment?
I apologize, I don't know that off the top of my head. But one would naturally presume that you go first to your supervisor.
I presume that. They set up, separate separate routes. They want to get it channeled into their human resources department. They don't want the supervisors becoming involved.
But if you're asking her then to go again to the management, whether it be the immediate supervisor or
whatever route there is, they'll provide a phone number for the human relations officer, and you go to that person. That's what all these companies do. I assume the Census Bureau does it. It's a safe harbor to an extent provided by the Supreme Court.
But again, I'm not sure where that's been proffered or shown in any of the evidence of a specific route above and beyond either complaining to your supervisor or, as in this case, going to filing an EEO complaint. And I'm not sure where, if one has an EEO complaint, they are precluded if they didn't go to HR first to file the same EEO complaint. Mm-hmm. And if I recall correctly, the only issue with regards to whether or not administrative action had been or not been exhausted was with regards to her complaint regarding her 10-day suspension, which we assert is part of the overall substantive facts and relates to the initial complaint, which does not require us to therefore file another EEO complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Further, the time that she filed was within the 60 days after the 10 days of her suspension when she returned back to work. And for that matter, allowed to return back to work.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize. I don't know if you want me to continue to argue or if you're thinking, Your Honor.
Well, do you have anything further you want to say, or do you want to reserve the remaining time?
I would like to reserve the remaining time.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eisenberg. Ms. Richards?
Good morning, Your Honors, if it please the Court. My name is Deborah Richards, and I'm an assistant U.S. attorney who is representing the Secretary of the Department of Commerce in this case. The appellant, Ms. Kane, has presented different arguments at every stage of her litigation, a strategy that has been rejected over and over again by this Court. A party can't bring arguments before the Court that were not brought before the District Court, nor can she bring arguments before this Court in a reply brief that weren't brought in the opening brief. And for these reasons alone, the summary judgment order can be affirmed. Beyond that, the order should be affirmed. The Secretary's facts are undisputed, and they demonstrate, and as the judge found in the District Court, those facts that were raised to the Court entitle the defendant to judgment as a matter of law. The plaintiff had opportunity to call to the Court's attention facts that would call the facts into evidence that was presented by the Secretary, and yet she chose not to do that. And those facts are undisputed. They're supported fully by admissible evidence, and upon review by the District Court.
Was Ms. Kane's deposition included among the summary judgment materials that the Secretary submitted?
Yes, Your Honor, it was. In fact, it fully supported the defendant's arguments in that she conceded many, many, many facts during the deposition. For instance, in the hostile work environment, Ms. Kane conceded that the only reason that she believed her immediate supervisor, Ms. Hurst, was being hostile and doing these things to her was because of her involvement with the union at that time, not because of any prior EEO activity. And she, during her deposition at the Supplemental Appendix 151 at 107, 4-10, and at the Supplemental Appendix 159 at page 140, 15 through 25. That's what she said. During that time frame, Ms. Kane was active in trying to bring a new union to the campus, and she was talking to hundreds of people, as she told me during her deposition. She was talking to hundreds of people during the work hours trying to make this occur. So she.
There was a union there, though, wasn't there?
There was a union in place at that time, and Ms. Kane also admitted that during her work hours, she would go to the union office to make sure that the current union employees were there and doing what they were supposed to do. So Ms. Kane's focus during this short term of employment was really on the union and not on the survey that was supposed to be done by these statistical clerks. They had a very short time frame that the work had to be accomplished. All of the statistical clerks were asked to focus on their duties. All of the statistical clerks were asked to make personal phone calls on their breaks and during the lunch hour and not during the work week or work day. All of the clerks were asked not to use the agent phone for personal calls because the agent phones were used for the survey and were subject to quality control monitoring by headquarters in Maryland as well as people within the National Processing Center. The evidence from Ms. Kane in her deposition supported the defendant's summary judgment motion. Ms. Kane herself, through her attorney, propounded discovery on the defendant as well as took several depositions. And yet, when it came time for the summary judgment, they didn't offer anything to call into question the legitimate non-discriminatory reasons that the secretary gave for taking the actions that they did. Ms. Kane brought three claims based upon retaliation, and all of them should be, the district court's decision should be affirmed. With regards to the 10-day suspension, the district court's opinion can be affirmed on any one of four reasons. The first is that, of course, the plaintiff did not bring up the 10-day suspension at all in the opening brief, and only on the reply brief did Ms. Kane make any arguments at all concerning whether that suspension was sufficiently exhausted and before the court. For that reason alone, it can be dismissed. But beyond that, that 10-day suspension was not exhausted. Ms. Kane did file an informal complaint concerning the suspension. She was advised by letter and verbally, as well as her attorney was advised, at least verbally, and to file a formal complaint if they wanted to pursue it, and they chose not to do so. And so they did not exhaust that. Ms. Kane makes the argument on her reply brief that the 10-day suspension is reasonably related to the charges in the EEO complaint, the original one. However, this court states that at a minimum, in order to be reasonably related, it must describe the same conduct and implicate the same individuals. And in this case, they don't. The suspension, which took place 4.5 months after the original EEO complaint was filed, concerned Angela Feldman Harkins, and she is the person who issued the suspension. During the EEO process that's before this court, Ms. Kane contended that it was Mr. Hackbarth, the director of the National Processing Center, and Ms. Annette Kendall who retaliated against her when she was brought back to work, and she contends that it was Ms. Hurst who subjected her to this alleged hostile work environment. She's made no allegations about Angela Feldman Harkins, and so on that basis, it's not reasonably related, and it's completely different conduct. The gravamen of the suspension was based upon Ms. Kane being absent without leave, or AWOL, and because of her extremely disruptive behavior during the June 14th and the June 19th time period, in which Ms. Kane refused to accept a BC-290 or request record of infraction, and she was slamming doors, refusing to obey, or slamming drawers on the desk, refusing to obey direct orders, and many other things that are detailed in the briefs. In addition, on that claim, Ms. Kane has never even tried to state her prima facie case to support such a claim, and the defendant has proffered that and said that she cannot state it, and we have cited to her deposition to support that. With regards to the hostile work environment claim, the judge asked whether Ms. Kane had made a complaint about it to her supervisors, and shortly after starting work in the survey processing branch,
is there a prescribed channel for complaining about harassment?
There is. And you can have a management inquiry done. And Ms. Kane went to Mr. Hackbarth, and as she told me, she put him on notice that she believed she was being harassed because she was not allowed to make personal phone calls. She couldn't use the agent phone for personal calls. She, as well as all the other statistical clerks, had to sign in and out so that the supervisor who worked two bays over would know where they were in case of emergency or otherwise to track them for work. And Mr. Hackbarth began and asked to be initiated a management investigation. It was a very robust investigation. Over 14 employees were interviewed during it, including Ms. Kane. And the outcome of that investigation showed no hostile work environment, that Ms. Kane was simply being subjected to the same supervisory requirements as the other employees, but that investigation found that instead Ms. Kane was being a very disruptive person within the workplace and causing a lot of discomfort among her colleagues and disrespectful conduct toward her supervisors. There is just no evidence that suggests and supports an objectively hostile or abusive work environment. As I said, Ms. Keene's focus was really on bringing in a new union, and that's where she was putting her energies and her discussions as opposed to actually doing the work for which she was hired. I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the court affirm the district court's opinion.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Richards. Mr. Eisenberg?
Your Honors, respectfully, if the worst truth to defend against is a half-truth, and my understanding of the record is the appellee is correct in saying that my client did state that she thought that supervisor's actions were related to her union activities. However, she also said that it was only part of the reason, not the entire reason. Even if the actions or the activities she was conducting happened to be union, we believe, as she's asserted, that the agency's actions against her were prompted by her prior EEO activity, which brought her to the forefront in this matter as an EEO case. Obviously, there is dispute. There is dispute in fact, and that's why summary judgment is not proper here. Even if we were to look at every single fact proffered by the government in their statement according to local rules as being founded, we were not the moving party in summary judgment. One would conclude that in looking at those facts, as we have been disputing as into their interpretation, in light most favorably to the non-moving party, which is Ms. Kane, the court should have deemed that summary judgment was not appropriate. Appellee has also conceded and corrected me in my lack of knowledge that my client had gone through the proper procedures in filing her harassment complaint. She also filed the proper EEO matter to bring us before this complaint. I see that my time is about up. Is there any specific questions that I can answer for the court at this point?
No.
Then I thank you, and I argue that the lower court case should be overturned or remanded back. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel. Last case for